I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gary.
And welcome to episode 59 of Choose Film, a real retrospective podcast, where we'll be taking a close look at a film chosen by our very special guest host. Each season is a different theme, and as you all know, we are on the theme of date night. Today we are joined by Jamie Thorburn, who has decided that on this episode we're going to be taking a look at Crazy Stupid Love. So Jamie, thanks for joining us.
Anytime.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I'm Jamie, I'm from Fife. I'm an actor, a playwright and a barber. I know. And I studied at Queen Margaret and Napier University with Rebecca, acting and stage and screen. And yeah, that's about it.
And
Jamie, you must be looking at my hair going, what is that right now? You must be like, what is going on there?
Not at all, mate, not at all.
Next time you're in Fife.
Yep.
I've got you.
You are writing something at the moment. You don't need to tell us obviously too much about it, but you're very exciting. You've been writing a play for a little while. And
yeah, since pretty much the start of lockdown, I've been writing a play called Deconstruction, which looks at men's mental health within the construction industry. Obviously it's in all industries, but construction's an industry. I know I spent 10 years in it, finally getting out earlier this year, which was great. So yeah. Fingers crossed it should be good.
Sounds like a really original concept as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fingers crossed anyway. Hopefully nobody's writing a play the exact same at the moment.
Well, word for word. I know, you heard it here first, folks, so it's okay. We've got this as like evidence in court. It's fine.
Yeah, it's exciting to actually see it go through all the stages. I know I've been pestering you for about a year and a half, asking you to read draft after draft after draft. So you'll be sick of it, but hopefully nobody else is.
Not at all. More than happy to. So, Crazy Stupid Love. Tell us about your choice, your selection. What made you pick it? Why is it applicable to date night? Tell us.
I think it's... when I heard the theme, first of all, it's the first film that came to mind. I didn't actually watch it on a date for the first time. I watched it with my friends. And I just think it's brilliant. Steve Carell at his finest, Ryan Gosling at his finest, Emma Stone at his finest.
Sorry, Emma, if you're listening.
Yeah, I know, sorry. I just think it's a great film all round. Easy watching. It's good.
Gary, had you seen it before?
Yep, I had seen it about, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, and I watched it again last night for the podcast, and it's kind of unbelievable how much society has changed. That made me watch this with like a slightly different perspective, shall we say. But I think the film's doing a lot of clever stuff, and they're deliberately looking at certain themes like masculinity and what it means to be a man, or what it means to, as we said before, like, if a woman sleeps about, how does that compare to a guy sleeping about? And I think it knows what it's doing. It's very clever. The title makes absolutely no sense. Crazy, comma, stupid, comma, love. There should be one comma there if it's crazy, stupid, and talking about love. What do you think of the title?
No.
It makes no sense.
I can't lie. I'm dyslexic, so I didn't even pick up on that.
It's deliberate. It's obviously, it's not a mistake. It's deliberate. I don't know what it's trying to say. Is it saying, is it three nouns? Is it crazy, stupid, and love? Or is it?
I always thought of it as like the one sort of sentence. I think it's like when if someone says, oh, I'm in love, and they're like, oh, what kind? And like, oh, like crazy, stupid love. Like, honestly, like the obsessed. That's
but thought, yeah. But it can't be because it's got that second comma, which is so.
Weird. I'm Googling it now. I'm not saying you're lying, but I've never really noticed it.
It is definitely the two commas.
By the way, this isn't my first point or anything. I have no idea why.
It seems to be. It seems to we've made it a point that we're all going to discuss. I mean, grammatically, it would be crazy, stupid, and love.
Or it would be crazy, stupid, love. Like, because you're crazy and stupid are describing
the
love. Anyway, we could sit and discuss
or maybe
title.
It should be crazy and stupid love.
Yeah, that would work.
If it was a list, would it not have commas in both bits?
But yeah. Your last description, you don't put a comma after it.
Somewhere, all of our English teachers and things are just like shouting to the speakers.
Actually,
like,
I think we should put it out to the listeners. If you know what this title is trying to say with its grammar, please let us know. Or if we're all just thick, let us know.
I mean, with the grammar, like what I kind of perceived it as is obviously there's a few instances where like people are like kind of head over heels in love kind of way where they start doing like silly things or
like getting their grammar wrong because they're so much in love.
exactly.
By the way, I failed higher English, it's okay.
Oh gosh, I didn't.
I did.
Oh dear.
Anyway, yeah, we should probably discuss the hilarious film and not the title.
I'm pretty sure I've got a couple of lecturers in mind, Jamie, that are probably, if they ever listen to this, would be sitting going, I'm going to beat them when I see them.
Yeah, probably. Also, my girlfriend's a teacher, so she'll probably think that as well.
But the film's great. I did really enjoy the film. I would score it, I would probably give it a good, right now, a 7.5 out of 10. Subject to change after the discussion.
Subject to change. Jamie, what would you rate the film out of 10?
Well, it appears we're on the same wavelength because I've went for 7.6.
Just over the halfway mark there.
Yeah.
Rebecca?
This is going to be low.
She's going low. I can feel it.
I knew it.
I am about the 6 mark, if I'm honest. 6 to 6.5. Yeah, I don't think anyone has scored something lower than that, have they, Carrie?
No, I always believe that a film deserves a 5 at least because they actually got it made, and that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons maybe then why I've, yeah.
We shall see.
We'll talk about it. Again, I'm just thinking about my aunt listening to this, wetting herself, because she's like, I just know when you're not on board with the film. But we can discuss, like, obviously open to hearing your thoughts. And it's good to get people that, you know, do really like it and open your eyes. Maybe there's something I've missed because it was my first time watching it. My mum says she's going to have a word with you, Jamie, is all I'm going to say. I know. Wasn't Fiona's cup of tea, Jamie? Wasn't her cup of tea? Here is a little synopsis for our listeners at home. So Cal Weaver is living the American dream. He has a good job, a beautiful house, great children, and a beautiful wife. Cal's seemingly perfect life unravels, however, when he learns that Emily has been unfaithful and wants a divorce. Over 40 and suddenly single, Cal is adrift in the fickle world of dating. Enter Jacob Palmer, a self-styled player who takes Cal under his wing and teaches him how to be a hit with the ladies.
25 years of marriage and you have nothing to say?
I'll just say it. I slept with someone.
If you keep talking, I'm going to get out of the car.
I think the fact that I did it just shows how broken we are.
Okay.
How much we really... Oh my God!
You're getting a divorce?
Yeah.
Amy heard you crying in the bathroom. We all thought it was cancer.
Oh.
Thank God, man.
Yeah, just my relationship.
Hi, can I buy you a drink?
Uh-huh.
Let's get out of here. Want to get out of here?
Yeah.
What are you doing later?
I don't know.
I do. There's lots of beautiful women in this bar, but I can't take my eyes off of you.
It's time to go home.
Oh, it's forward of you, but okay.
Yeah.
Should I pull the car around? Have you been drinking? I'll drive.
Hey, ladies man guy. Any tips of the trade?
Your wife cheated on you because you lost sight of who you are as a man. Why don't you take that straw out of your mouth? It looks like you're sucking on it.
Okay.
You're sitting there with a Supercuts haircut, and you're wearing a 44 when you should be wearing a 42 regular. Credit card. Where are your wallets? Did you sleep with them?
Jeez, God!
Yeah, probably.
You would?
You gotta take control of your manhood, pal.
Can you put on some clothes, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, is this bothering you? Beautiful.
Well, now we're all going to share our 3 points. We'll all go around one at a time. Gary, would you like to go first?
Yeah, so my first point is just on, like, if you viewed this as a rom-com, a romantic comedy, which is pretty much how it was marketed as. I also think that's true. It is a romantic comedy. But one of the reasons I think this film works so well is because it doesn't follow the typical Hollywood formula. You've not got boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy wins girl back. That's like the typical from the start of Hollywood rom-coms. That's basically the structure. But instead, what we have here is three interlocking stories. So you've got the marriage separation between Cal and Emily. You've got Jacob trying to sleep with Hannah, but ends up falling for her instead. And the last one is between Robbie and his love for his babysitter, Jessica, which is one of the cutest romances ever. But the other reason this film, well, I think the film works is because it's not just targeted at women. You know, it's a comedy on remarriage. Our main couple, Cal and Emily, they take a long, hard look at themselves. They look at their marriage and their life without each other before finally, obviously, reuniting like on what can be perceived as like a stronger foundation. And although not all the romances work by the end, i.e. the wee boy and his big babysitter, even their relationship is stronger by the end because they tend to take a step back and look at it. And then by the end, their relationship maybe isn't romantic, but it's definitely built on a stronger foundation by the end of this film. I don't know how you feel, but I feel like this has got more of a structure that's kind of the same formula as something more like Love Actually, rather than your typical rom-com, you know, because you've got that twist that Hannah is actually Cal's daughter, which is like kind of like that part in, say, Love Actually, where you find out Emma Roberts, not Emma Roberts, Emma Thompson's character is the sister to...
Emily Blunt.
No.
Oh, sorry, we're talking about Love Actually. Sorry.
Yeah. And Love Actually, Emma Thompson is related to the Prime Minister, the brother and sister. You know, that's quite a reveal towards the end. So, yeah, I just like the structure of it and how it's not the typical storyline. Like, once Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone get together, like, even though Cal tries to, like, tear them apart, like, they never fall out or anything like that. Once they're together, they don't need that. Boy loses girl and wins him back, you know, and the same with Cal and Emily, their relationship it fails at the start and then it's not reunited until the end.
Pretty much along the same lines as my first point, in terms of, like, it does tackle the theme of love from every side and every stage as you grow.
Yeah.
Right, even to the point of Ryan Gosling's character talking about his parents. That's another whole take on love and how they split up and things like that. You've got every kind of love from a young infatuation to slightly older, thinking I'm old now, the older guy will want me, to a marriage that's stuck in its ways and all that. And I think it does beautifully show that, but not just shove it in your face.
Yeah.
It's very subtle in the way that it does it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think as well that is another positive of the film, is from a, like, if you watched it from a generational point, as you said, like, so if you are, I don't know, early teens and put this on, you're going to really relate to the wee boy and the babysitter. If you're like between like in your 20s to 30s, it's going to definitely be like the Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone relationship. And then obviously more older married couples would maybe relate to Steve Carell and Julianne Moore's part, which usually with any rom-com, it would just focus on one of them. You know, any other film would just focus on one, but it's doing a lot more.
It also doesn't paint anybody out to be the bad guy, which I think would have been so easy to do. Like, Julianne Moore's character did cheat, but they didn't just go, oh, you cheated, you're a terrible person. They gave you the reasons why and where it went wrong and all those sort of things, and I think that was really clever the way they did that.
Here's a question on that then. Do you think if Cal found out that Emily cheated, do you think he would have split with her? Because it's interesting that she cheats and then asks for the divorce. She cheats, then asks to split up. It's not like he finds out and then splits up, then wants her back. You know, it's a bit unusual.
I don't think so, because the film also tries to tackle, like, nowadays, the amount of people I know who I went to school with, who have been married, were together a year and then divorced, mm-hmm. is unreal. And the generation of fighting for it and working through problems is totally gone. Well, yeah. It seems to be gone. And even to the point where when Cal's at work and his boss comes in and he tells him about the divorce, he goes, oh, we thought it was cancer. It's just a divorce.
Yeah.
Like, so flippant.
It's so common. Yeah.
Oh, it could be worse. It's just a divorce. Like, I think.
And he announces it to the whole office, doesn't he? He's like, relax, everyone. It's just a divorce.
Yeah.
So for that, like, I don't think he would have walked away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's why he likes to jump. Not likes to, sorry. I think that's why he jumps out the car at the start, because he doesn't want to even discuss the idea of divorce. He would rather just get out a moving vehicle than even listen to it. You okay, Rebecca? You've not jumped in.
I'm listening and mulling over what you mean. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. There's none of this bashing of, I mean, we're all human, we all make mistakes and we all do things that we're not happy about and everything, you know, and the film isn't bashing Julianne Moore for what she's done, which is, I guess, is a good thing, it's a nice thing, but yeah, I do quite like how it is quite episodic, isn't it? So it's not following it from start to beginning. We are getting a little bit of a mix of different scenarios. And yeah, that is perhaps relatable for a lot of people. But yeah, you're totally right, Jamie. Unfortunately, the generation that want to fight for the marriage is slowly dying out. And there's probably a lot of people of our generation that are like, don't see the necessity of it and everything. Not to anyone that's getting married, don't do it. But yeah, it's quite nice to see them like trying to work through it rather than just leaving it. I don't know if that was all waffle. I'm really trying to it makes it sound like I really, please edit this out. It makes it sound like I really detest this film, and it's not that. It's just, I'm just trying to remember bits of it, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with some of the things, which is what I'm trying to process.
I think the interesting thing is the film and the writing are both not trying to be sweet on what love is.
Very unforgiving, very honest, mm-hmm. Which is good.
Because even with Jacob's character, right, that could be perceived as like, oh, he's a cool guy going out sleeping with all the birds, going to the same bar, picking up a girl every night.
It's interesting that you've said cool, because for me, he's been written in as the very misogynistic sort of flashy guy that you would not be around.
But that's my point, is if they were trying to make him be cool, you would have him with a bunch of friends in that bar cheering him on. He's there every night alone.
There's a big difference between like the likes of Jacob Palmer and Hitch,
mm-hmm.
of like, you know, looking for companionship and talking to women, and I guess like doing things to get their attention, to I just want to take them home, and that's really the extent of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go into it too much because it's in my third point, but I think though, he doesn't understand companionship or doesn't believe in companionship, again, which is rooted in his past. You know, he can't understand that. So it plays him off as this cool, hip guy until we get to that third act and we realise the way he is centred on his childhood.
Well, my first point is going to be the cast in general. we've already kind of touched on it, but I thought there was a great variety of different actors and things in there. Like, I really like Julianne Moore, and normally see her in kind of serious roles, and it was quite nice to see her in something that was a bit different. Ryan Gosling as well, and obviously Emma Stone. They're not new to this kind of genre, is what I meant to say, because they did like La La Land together and everything and things like that. But I just loved Steve Carell. I think he's one of those actors that's so subtle, so understated, and just very like really listens when you're performing with him. And you can see that he's reacting in the moment. It doesn't ever feel forced. I know he's like this big comedy, like we see him from The Office and we see him in like maybe what 40-year-old Virgin and things like that, and it's all heightened and stuff. But there are some just beautiful moments in the film. One of my favourite scenes out of the film is the bar scene with him and Jacob, and he's basically saying how Jacob isn't good enough for his daughter, and talking about how he learned her how, he taught her how to ride a bike and everything, and Jacob would never understand that. They had her when they were very young and things like that, and it was just so sweet and so believable. And obviously it's never nice for someone to hear you're not good enough from my son or daughter, but there was a really nice tenderness. It felt really real, very raw, and I just loved it. I was just engrossed with him. I couldn't take my eyes off him. But yeah, I thought he was wonderful. I love him in pretty much everything that he's in, but I just think he's perfect in this.
Kyle's right though as well, because Jacob would never really understand what it's like to be like shown by a parent how to like ride a bike or or anything like that. So even though he's not meaning it as like
a big... part of him probably is, because he's angry, because he knows what Jacob's like. He knows how he's there every night, and to Cal, because he's obviously been taken under this wing, so he knows his tactics, he knows his ways. He's probably like, you're not going to understand this, because all you have been doing is just hooking up with women all the time and not actually having intimacy.
Well, he's not got a family. In Cal's eyes, he's not got a family too. So Jacob's not been a dad to show a daughter how to ride a bike, but at the same time, Jacob as a child was never shown, or perhaps was never shown how to do it. So it's actually kind of like a double dig, even if Cal doesn't realise that, which is really interesting as well. To be fair, my second point is actually just on the performances and the characters as well. As you said, Rebecca, Steve Carell's performance is quite subtle compared to some of his other work, and Julianne Moore is great in it as well. One of the scenes that really gets me is when Emily phones Cal pretending the pilot light is going out.
Yeah, that's a lovely scene.
But he's standing in the garden and he sees that all she wants is to hear his voice. That's all she wants, is to just have a conversation with him about anything. And he just plays along, which I think is great. He doesn't say, oh, I can see you. I feel like if that film had another hour to go, that could have ended up being a recurring scene. You know, where every now and again she phones him about something random that doesn't actually exist. Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone work perfectly as a couple as well. Anyone who's listen to this podcast probably knows my favourite musical is La La Land, just because the two of them work perfectly on screen. I'd watch that again tonight. My only issue though is I do have a problem with Emma Stone's character in it though, not that she's bad in any way, but her character arc basically finishes when she dumps her boyfriend, and that's her achieved her goal, being her own independent woman. And then she's kind of just used as an objective to divide Cal and Jacob up. And from that moment on, she really doesn't have any agency. I think that's okay, though, because our main characters, 100%, is Julianne Moore and Steve Carell. It's their story. So she is kind of, not a sub-character, but a supporting character, I would say. So it's okay to lose her, because if it's any other film, a lot of supporting characters don't have character arcs, so the fact that she does, it just ends a little too quickly for me.
I think we were all on the same page because the performances are my second point as well. Everything that you say, yeah. This was the film for me that I was like, wow, Steve Carell can act. Like, he's not just a funny man. He is amazing at acting. And it's just the depth of his performance and those moments that you were talking about is fantastic.
Has MD seen Foxcatcher?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
What a film. What his performance in it. He's so menacing in it. Totally new character for him.
I actually think Crazy Stupid Love got him that role.
Yeah, I could believe that, actually, yeah. I could believe that. Absolutely. I think the reason the characters work so well, to remove them, if you like, from the actors, is we learn a lot through their actions and on-screen imagery as well, not through exposition and dialogue. So, for instance, the opening shots, the film opens in the restaurant, and we see a lot of fancy dress shoes and high heels, and then it just cuts to Cal's running trainers, and in that one shot it says so much about him, that he's stopped trying, that he's kind of given up, he's not even dressing up for a night out with his wife. And then later we're introduced to Jacob, and that starts on his slick shiny shoes, and then we tilt up and see he's in this well-tailored suit. And again, we learn so much about him, the way he moves, the way he dresses. You know, it's like wee things like that that we learn about the character rather than them sit there and explain it. It's not until the third act of the film we learn more about their paths and who's connected to who and stuff like that.
There seems to be I watched this with my girlfriend and she said there seems to be a theme of feet in this film, because when you're introduced to people for the first time, it happens with Emma Stone as well. When she walks in, you see her feet as she walks in from the rain, do you not?
Well, it kind of makes sense, and it is a good visual metaphor, because people do say, like, I don't know if it's because I used to work in a shoe shop, but we would, like, look at someone's feet as they come in and could say so much about who they are and what kind of trainers we're going to buy or what kind of outfit they wear. And there was a running joke that if we ever went on a date, the first thing we would do is look at what's on their feet. You know,
I have heard that, yeah.
Also, the way somebody walks is a massive thing, like the walk with purpose. Mm-hmm. And you can see that from the knee down. Do you know what I mean? The way that somebody strides and the pace that they're moving at.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I think all the performances, even the wee boy, he's great in it as well.
Yeah. I like that exchange he has with the other man. I can't remember his name. The one that sleeps with Emily, that Emily has the affair with. And he's like... right, so you're that guy. You're the guy that was with my mum then embarrasses him and makes him feel tiny and is like, my dad and my mum, not going anywhere. They're going to work it out. And it's interesting.
That's another great bit of visual storytelling, is when Kevin Bacon sits down in that office to talk to Robbie, that's the wee boy's name, when he sits down to talk to Robbie extends his chair higher.
Yeah.
So he's looking down at Kevin Bacon. And I remember going for interviews and stuff like that. And when we were doing like practice interviews, they would tell us always put your chair as high as it will go, because the interviewer will always put it down so that they're looking down at you, or will give you a smaller chair. So try and sit taller. And just when the wee boy does that in an office environment, oh, it just sold me. It was great.
Yeah. With like.
Says me,
man...
it's like getting up in my chair. I know.
Yeah, I just thought it was very interesting, because very rarely do you see a child sort of address the person that's what labelled as the home wrecker kind of like position. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do you see a child's engagement.
Yeah, usually in films, like, you know, the kid would maybe catch one of their parents in an act that they shouldn't be in. They'll slam the door in a rage, and then we stick with the parent. But in this film, you actually see it all from like the child's point of view as well. Even when Cal and Emily come home from the divorce dinner, and right away the kid hears that they're getting a divorce, but it's not as if he slums away. He stays in the room and keeps questioning it as well.
Again, that just going back to what Jamie said at the beginning, that is just an example of how common divorce is. Like, I know, like, looking at my family, pretty much all of them are either, they're divorced and or they've all got different partners and things like that now. And, like, when you look around and then you go, oh, wait, your parents are divorced too? Oh, are your parents divorced too? And now it's, like, a thing where it's no longer, like, it doesn't feel like the end of the world anymore, which is strange, but also it's just how it is. And I think him, that Robbie reacting away rather than like running away and going, I can't believe that you ruined my life, he actually wants to sit and go, right, so why, and who's this guy, and have you got no idea what you've done? It's just that's more realistic nowadays than anything.
And that's
else.
The older generation that you're talking about, Rebecca, as well. Our parents, you know, there's like still our generation and now the generation before us. It's like, in 50 years, is marriage still going to be a way to express love, or is it going to be something new or different?
Depends.
We're getting
on
way off topic here, I
depends,
know.
Depends what your view is on marriage, Gary.
It does, yes.
What is it?
This is a film podcast, not a love podcast and relationship advice podcast. So moving on. Jamie, did you want to say something else on that?
No, I was letting you dig a hole deeper and deeper.
Yeah, I'm done.
Oh, gosh. Okay, is it me? I think it's me.
Yes.
Another thing that I really liked about the film is I just really loved the twist. Unfortunately, the twist was spoiled for me because I accidentally saw it on a TikTok beforehand before I watched the film. So when I saw the twist, I was like, oh, that's a really good twist. That film looks good. I watched it, and all the way through it, obviously, I had my mum and Ross was watching it with us as well. And they were like, I don't really get what's going on here, what's like blah blah blah, and then I was like, no, wait, and then when the twist hit for me, that's when the film really started. Mm-hmm. Personally speaking, that's when things really started to kick into motion, and
which
I enjoyed it.
Interesting, because you would have probably felt like it was moving along nicely if you didn't know the twist, I guess, you know, because you're waiting for something that none of us know about first time. Another reason to hate TikTok, that's all I'm saying.
Uninstall. No, it was interesting. Again, this can be edited, but because I saw what was going to happen, I was looking forward to seeing the film even more. So when Jamie was like, we're going to watch it, I was like, great, I kind of know the twist, but it's cool because it looks really good. And then watching it, and I was watching it with people that didn't know about the twist either, and we were all three of us still sort of on the same page of, when is something going to happen here? And then when the twist happened, it was like a relief of, right, this for all three of us who knew, I knew the twist and they didn't, that's when I felt the film truly, really started for me.
See, that's interesting, because I feel like that scene there, is, if we look at the normal structure of a rom-com, that is the boy loses girl segment, you know, that's us like nearing the end, he just has to do this big thing to win her back. So I know that's not, but in a way, if you look at them as one whole relationship, that's where they've lost each other and now they need to like reconcile. And so to me, that was us wrapping up the film after that scene. And for you, it's interesting how
because that's where things were being, that was the challenge in the film for me, that's where things get complicated. Maybe it should have come earlier, like halfway through.
I mean,
expand on that when in a little bit of time. At some point, I'll expand on why I think that and everything. But
I mean, yeah. I think the goal for the characters obviously wasn't for Jacob and Hannah to tell the parents that they're dating or anything. I think the goals, that's why it's definitely Cal's story, like it's Steve Carell's story, and his goal is to find almost his purpose in life once he's getting a divorce. And it seems to be that his purpose in life is to be with his family and be with Emily, and through, you know, trying to change his perception of himself and how he dresses and how he acts, he realizes that, you know, what he had all along was okay, just needs to try a wee bit harder than that, which goes back again full circle of like people give up on on Maddie's too easily. Mm-hmm. I think. Jamie, help dig me out of this hole here. Come
I
on.
Think as well, see if they had put that twist in the middle, just following on from what Gary said, it would have become their story.
Yeah.
I think they were very deliberate and set in their way of they wanted it to be a story about relationships and, as cheesy as it sounds, love and the many different stages and different layers that comes under. And to bring that twist in a lot sooner, it would have changed the whole film. It would have taken away from their point.
Actually, can I jump in on that, Jamie, yeah, as well? If we look, I know I keep going back to this, right, but it's because it's a formula, it works, and that's why it's used. Sorry about the barking dogs in the background. I don't know if you can hear them, but if we look at the boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy wins girl back, rather than it being boy and girl, it's Cal and Jacob's kind of story. It's Cal's story, but so if you look at that, it's Cal and Jacob meet, and then they have the massive falling out at that part at the garden party thing. So Cal loses Jacob, or Jacob loses Cal, and then they need to reconnect again before the end of the film, and they obviously fall out due to Hannah. So it does follow that same kind of structure, but it's just not the characters that we do, because it is technically a love story between these two men. It's just a different type of love again, you know. Because Cal is properly in love with how easily Jacob is getting by in life and swooping up with these women and things like that. Learns it's all an act, and he's been using his own daughter, and then has to find a way to forgive him and be in his life again, or be in each other's lives.
I know this is potentially in your third point, Gary, so I won't touch on it too much.
That's okay, go for it.
The fact of Jacob's family and that lack of a dad figure, he's getting that from Cal. And not only that, he says how soft his dad was and how good of a person he was, but because of that, he got screwed over. And Cal's following in the same arc as his dad.
Yeah.
So he has seen him like a father figure, and he's not wanting Cal to get hurt again. That's why he takes him on this journey.
Agreed. Rebecca doesn't, but...
It's okay, we'll talk about it in a bit. I'm just going to shelve it, and then we'll come back to why I don't 100% agree with what you've said. But I hear you. What's your third and final point, Gary?
Me. It's just how the film presents us with certain themes and situations that are accurate for every single one of us. So we've kind of touched on most of this already. But we've all lost friends through broken relationships. We've had that crush on the older babysitter, or like older person in our lives, or we've split up from someone who we think may be the love of our lives. But to me, the film is about the fake illusion of love. So Emily has this illusion that she can do better than Cal. Jacob thinks dressing well and bedding girls is the way to be. Again, that's because of his childhood. His mum was beautiful but vain. His dad was rich but people took advantage. So his mum and dad's relationship didn't work, so he believes love doesn't really exist. But obviously through the film, he realises that love might exist if you spend more than a one-night stand with them. That's what he learns through this. That's a kind of his redemption. But the film is kind of sleazy, right? But it's deliberate. No, but it's deliberately sleazy. It means to be sleazy. It knows exactly what it's doing, because what it's trying to do is, straight men who watch this are supposed to, first of all, look at like Ryan Gosling's character and go, oh, he's cool, he's slick, I want to be like that, I want to have that type of life. And women, let's face it, look at Ryan Gosling and wouldn't mind going to bed with Ryan Gosling, like he's a good looking guy. So even though he's an ass, there's something about his life that is tempting. And so what the film's deliberately doing is questioning our own morals. that's why we don't find out about his past till the end. You know, it's making us question what he's doing and would we like to be like that or not. And then at the end, we're like, no, I wouldn't. And then you find out why he's like that. And the film doesn't only focus on the good sides of love. It shows the damages that love can do as well, I think. And that's what I mean. It's like, it's the ugly truth of love. And I don't know if, I know Rebecca's seen this, I don't know if you have, Jamie, but it's doing the same thing for me that Little Miss Sunshine did about family. You know, Little Miss Sunshine shows you both sides of family, you know, these dysfunctional families and how by the end, like, they make that work. And rather than it being about family, it's about love, you know, like, in that they both, they love their family, but they hate their family. And it's the same sort of themes in this. And what's kind of ironic about that is the thing it got me thinking about Little Miss Sunshine was the music through this film. And then I looked it up and it's actually the same composer.
Yeah, I did wonder that.
So yeah, I think it's not going to try and go, oh, this is a nice love story, the same way Little Miss Sunshine isn't going, this is just a nice wee family story. You know, there's some ugly truths in both films, and I think it's deliberate. And it's interesting though, Rebecca, because when we spoke about Dirty Dancing, we were talking about how if a girl goes about with lots of different men, she's called a slut, which isn't right, whereas a guy can go do it and it's fine. I think this film is trying to say it's not fine, and there may be reasons why a guy would act like that.
Yeah, 100%. That's actually like my kind of final point of how it's not dressing anything up. It is being very, like, so the whole, like, Robbie fancying his babysitter that's older and stuff, like, it's quite uncomfortable. And when she's wanting to send pictures of herself to Cal, you're like, God, don't do it. Please don't do that. So it's showing you the ugly side of it, absolutely, of this is what happens when people get divorced. And also to make it even harder when they get divorced, there's still a lot of feelings involved and they do actually still like each other, but they don't really know what they want, and that makes things even harder. Someone that thinks he's got everything, but actually at the end of the day, when he goes home, what does he have? He just has this big
Yeah, the house is depressing. So depressing. Look,
it's cold.
It's like very, like, obviously fancy looking, but there's no warmth to it in the slightest. It's funny because we all talk about how much warmth there is in The Shining hotel.
I know.
I'd still pick that over this house.
It was quite funny watching when Hannah says to him, "What's your move?" And he's like, "It's a Dirty Dancing move." It's funny how all of the films have linked together that we've spoken about. Like, that was funny watching that. And I guess, like, quite tender too. But I found that there was also quite a big sadness about it, that she's like, "I know exactly what you're like. What's your move?" And he's like, "Oh, right, okay." And he does it for her. And it doesn't, nothing happens. So I just thought that there was, it's almost as if it's like a routine of, I'll go to the bar, I'll speak to them like this, I'll tell them that they're coming home with me, I'll do the move if it's not happening organically, and I'll get them to go. And you're absolutely right, it is no way to live unless that is really what you want to do. But it does it's not shying away from the shitty end of the stick.
And he also doesn't sleep with her on that night, because he's talking about his past, and I think it's like, does she not say to him, or like, tell me one more story, then we have sex, or something like that? So, and he starts talking about his mum, and then it does that montage. Sorry, Jamie, on you go.
She's the one pushing the sex.
Yeah.
She's like, "I'm going to come back here, and we're going to bang." That's a direct quote. She keeps pressing it, and she's like, "This isn't going to be where the girl falls asleep and they don't have sex and all that sort of stuff.
You put a blank over me."
Yeah, it's the opposite. And it's really sad because his house is industrial and very cold. And he buys things like the vibrating chair to try and fill and give him some sort of substance. Whereas in the garage, it's just boxes, and it's just hollow and empty. And if you actually look at the end, when Ryan Gosling's trying to get Emma Stone to phone her dad, they're in a different house, and it's warm, right, and it's cosy, and it's like a home.
It's probably her flat, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
It's interesting as well, because the reason, well, it's not, it's probably not the only reason, but the reason Hannah splits from her boyfriend is because he says he doesn't know where he's at with the relationship, and she was ready to get married. And I think what that's trying to say is, as well, is like, she's an old traditionalist, you know, that's what she was ready for. But then through, it's not going to say that her and Jacob by the end of it are going to get married, but at least she's found someone that's got a connection with, you know. She was only ready,
yeah,
she didn't seem to be in love with that other guy, she just wanted to do the traditional, I'm with this guy and we're going to get married.
You know, on paper it looks good, yeah.
Yeah, but now she's with someone that she seems to have a connection with, whether they get married or not, she's now happy, at least in conversations, and at, like, that bedroom scene shows, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where we are. Has everyone shared their three?
I've still got one.
Okay.
Which is, I think we've said it without saying it, but how self-aware the film is and how much it pokes fun at itself. Like, the big one for me was when, after the confrontation with the school teacher that Cal slept with. Oh, brilliant. And they're outside and they have the argument, and then it starts raining, and he's like, oh, what a cliche.
Yeah, yeah, I love that line. That was, it's really just clever. Yeah,
it's just like, we know this is a rom-com. We, yeah, know it's a rom-com, and we're going to let you know that we know it. It's almost very Brechtian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that... I know, big word, eh, Rebecca?
My. Robin's now like, I've forgiven you.
I know, that's me back in the good books. But it is, it's like, it's breaking the fourth wall to, like, sort of shake you and go, but remember, we're telling you this. Like, this is what you have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And it does that throughout. Even the fight at the end, when everybody's like on Ryan Gosling, and he's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It's constantly just, like, poking fun at itself and saying, yeah, we know it's a rom-com, we know this is quite exaggerated, but listen.
Even the cop, after the party, the fight, and he's like, I'm just going to put this down, what is it he says? I'm just going to put this down as a domestic disturbance or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, and because I don't even know what's going on here anymore, because it's kind of so over the top.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that just lends it, like, it's very clever, like, the whole way through. And that's just another layer of how smart they're being with what they're actually trying to say and what they're actually trying to show.
Yeah.
So, it's that's why it's good.
So, I'm sorry, I keep looking at Rebecca's face, who just does not look amused at all.
So have we all shared our points?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so does anybody have any other points that they're not too sure on? Me? Okay, let's go. Okay, so yeah, I kind of said that for me, the twist is where it kind of all kicked off for me. And if I'm honest, that is like the section from then to the end, apart from the end bit, which was just too much cheese for my liking, is where I really kind of enjoyed the film. I feel the female characters were really underwritten. I didn't really sympathise much with Emily. Like, I didn't really... To me, I really want to care if these people get back together, divorce. That's what kind of rom-com's supposed to do. And for me, I was just a bit... I wasn't very invested in it, which upsets me, because I think both of them had some lovely moments, but I was just a bit like, I'm not really bothered. I thought Emma Stone was also a great actress, and where she should have been in way more of the film for that to have worked as an episodic kind of piece. Like, she was easily forgotten. When we went back to her, we saw her two times. We saw her once when she's having dinner with the boyfriend, and then the next scene is or when she's having, like, drinks in the bar and stuff, and she meets Jacob. And then the next time we see her is when she's not getting the promotion and she walks away, and I'm like, all right, okay, well, that's a good arc, very short arc. And I think I would have preferred it to have not had that character in it at all until Jacob goes to Cal's house, and that's where we see the daughter for the first time. I just feel like we could, there just should have been more arc for them, if personally for me.
Can I jump in though? Because like, I feel like it's not their story though.
I know it's not their story, but I don't know why you would have them there. Like, there just wasn't enough.
Well, you need Julie Moore to kickstart the story. Well, you need her character to kickstart the story. And it's about how what she does affects Cal. Mm. And then because of that, that's what creates the connection between Cal and Jacob, whose story we're trying to tell.
Yeah, but we could have still had that connection if we didn't see the daughter at all.
But then you wouldn't have, because then there's no confrontation at the party, which you enjoy.
Because if she was, yeah, that, but that's what I mean. That's like where the only arc really is like if she's in it, but if she's not in it at all, then the confrontation just comes from her coming in and him going, "That's actually my daughter." I just feel like I was just a bit sad and gutted that we didn't see more of her, because I really like Emma Stone, and I know it's so not a film about that. But
yeah, but can I ask something then? So you wanted more because of who the actor is, not because of the character?
No, but because of the whole like film, it just felt a bit pointless. Focusing on that and seeing
Do you not think that that again is a device of like snapping the audience out of getting too engrossed? Like if it's constantly following Cal and Jacob, and then it quickly goes to Emma Stone, it's sort of like, oh, why are we getting her again? And it's like, all right.
Well, no, because I knew what the twist was, and like I guess my mum and Ross were like, all right, okay, but I just feel we could have had maybe a couple more scenes of her. Or maybe she bumped into Jacob again.
Well, you've got her friend, though, who constantly messages her, phones her saying, oh, he's back in the bar, he's back in the bar. She's like, no, I'm not interested, I'm with my lawyer guy. And then it takes him to, well, basically feck her over, doesn't it, with the marriage thing, to then go,
yeah,
do you know what, I'm my own woman and I can go sleep with whoever I want.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, you can. But I don't know, I just would have maybe liked one or two more interactions with her and Jacob for me to feel a bit like, okay, this makes more sense to me. Like the connection feels more. I mean, they've already got great chemistry, but I just would have cared. And also, I would have also liked to have seen her reaction to Cal saying to her, I don't think you should be with him because he does this, this, and this. Another thing I really liked, actually, was the babysitter storyline of... I thought her arc was way better than both Emily and Hannah's. I just thought, I was like, I feel more invested in this than I should.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that.
That would be my only really kind of things. That's why it really brings it down for me. I just needed a bit more. If we're doing this whole episodic thing of, okay, here's this other character, and you're obviously like, okay, well, they're linked some way. I would just like to have seen more of that. For it to be a bit more kind of balanced and a bigger payoff for me to be like, ah, okay, that feels like a natural progression in the relationship and that kind of thing.
I think it would be interesting if she got, this would make her be cheating, I guess, but when she leaves the lawyer guy after he offers her the job, if she hadn't split up with him at that point, but had slept with Ryan Gosling and gave her some conflict, you know.
Yes, exactly. We just needed something more there for me.
Carried, cause I think her character arc works well. I think it just happens too soon. She completes it too soon, which that might have branched it out slightly more, where she's now got a confliction in her life as well.
Mm-hmm. Like if she bumped into him when Cal was trying on all the clothes and things like that, like in the background, if we saw like a short little exchange or... I don't know. I would just have liked a little bit more of that. So a little bit more of that to be established, so that when she goes back to the bar to go to sleep with him, I'm like, okay, I understand why she's going back. Because to me, it just looks like it's a light bulb moment of, I see that guy here that hit on me a few weeks ago. I'm going to go back to the bar and see who's there.
It's a rebound. She's using him as a rebound. Yeah. Jamie, sorry, I feel like you've been dying to get in and I've been jumping in.
No, not at all. I'm just... I'm listening to the back and forth.
Yeah. I don't think... Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, we've all got, like, our own opinion stuff. I don't think anything I've said is, like, too...
No.
No, not at all. This is what the podcast is about, is discussion and...
see all of these bits with his parents and stuff. I totally forgot all about that until you guys have mentioned it. So for me, I would have liked to have seen a bit more vulnerability and like, oh my God, like I actually really like this girl and there's a chance that I might lose her, but it seemed to just all work out. And that to me isn't real or would have happened in real life.
I think it all worked out though because she is her own independent woman and like hasn't stopped seeing Jacob for her dad. You know, it shows a bit of strength in Emma Stone's character.
It does. It does. But you still would have, I think you still would have a conversation about it.
Oh,
I mean, they've just been in a big fisticuff fight. It was that bad.
Yeah, true. What I think's interesting is usually with a rom-com, they're usually about the 90-minute mark. And this isn't, like, this was, I think it's closer to 2 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So you then wonder what actually was cut out. You know, it'd be interesting to see if that's in the script at all, those missing scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as well, when it is someone who you're watching that you know can do amazing performances, you're like, why are you not using that person?
I mean, La La Land, for example, I can't say that, like, I loved it, right?
Why not?
But I still, like, appreciated their connection and loved their connection and loved that kind of journey. And, yeah, I know it's a different kind of film and it is more Cal's story and things, but I just would have, yeah.
I've got just one quick note to finish off on. What do you think was an envelope that was given to Robbie at the end?
The pictures.
Do you think so?
Oh, I really hope not. Please no.
100%.
We were talking about how in Dirty Dancing that so Baby's supposed to be 18 and Johnny's supposed to be 21, but Jennifer Grey was 26 and Patrick Swayze was 34. Watching the casting in that was way more believable. I did believe that like they were those kind of age groups, but the thought of like this...
I mean, what age is
given this young boy? I mean, he's in eighth grade.
I think he was 14.
I mean, he's
wow. We're learning a lot about you, Gary.
No, I was going to say he's probably started getting those thoughts.
Oh,
you know. Absolutely.
So, well, look at the first time we're introduced to him. What did she catch him doing?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That's so funny. He's like, oh, yeah, I was thinking about you the whole time. She's like, please stop talking.
Yeah, it's funny. I hope that didn't look like I was bashing the film. Please
make sure
that's
edited. See if there's an episode where we're just sitting agreeing with each other. That's probably really boring to listen to. So it's probably better when there's a bit of confrontation and people's points and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think so. And I was reading another review and I was like, I just don't see like what they're talking about. And I've like heard your points and I can understand like some of the points you guys have made. And I've probably missed a few things when I've watched it as well. But... Yeah. It's all flattery. I just wanted more Julianne Moore and Emma Stone. Mm-hmm.
The thing is, as well, we're looking at it from maybe not necessarily from the point of view of, oh my God, Ryan Gosling's so cool. Because we were watching it to pick it apart. And it's interesting to hear the views from a female's perspective as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I agree that if there had been more of Julianne Moore and Emma Stone, it would have been interesting to see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you were picking it apart at all. It's all right. I know you hate my film, Rebecca. It's fine.
No, I don't. Rather than the teacher going mental for about 10 minutes of the film, I would have, you know, cut that in half. And
I thought it was quite sad that when her and Cal hooked up, the thing that was like making her want him more was the fact that he was telling her the truth.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say? And this film was made in 2011. So, that's terrible.
We've still got a lot to learn, I think. Still got a long way to go. Okay, so now that we have spoken about other points, has anyone's rating changed or anything like that at all?
Yep.
I'm going to go up to... an 8 out of 10 after that discussion.
Wow.
They're going to go up half a point.
I
Rebecca's face.
I know. I'm bumping it up to 8.5 because yesterday I was sat watching the film and I was saying all the points to my partner, and she was like, I think you're going a little bit too in depth about like such tiny little things, but then the fact that you guys have picked up on them as well, I'm like, well, I'm not just going OTT, like, these are actual things. So
wow, I'm certainly sticking. You've not won me over, sorry guys. No, you need to rewatch it. That's the problem. That's amazing. Lovely. Well, we are going to take a little break, and when we return, we will have our quiz, share a fact of the day, and also any creative recommendations that our listeners should be checking out.
Cal?
Is that him?
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
Do you guys know each other?
What's going on?
Doing here?
Hey, Nana.
Hi, Robbie.
Hey, Nana.
Hi, cutie. Jacob, it's so nice to meet you. I've heard so many wonderful things about you from Nana.
I'm sorry, what's a Nana?
I'm a Nana. You know, I couldn't say Hannah when I was little. How do you know my dad? She couldn't say our H's at all.
Okay, I'm having trouble understanding what's going on right now.
Dad, this is Jacob, my boyfriend.
No, it's not.
I was bringing him over to meet Mom.
No, 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 no.
I want to see the boyfriend. Can't breathe. Please, can I take this off now?
Cal, what are you doing? What are you doing with the daughter that's grown up?
I was 17. That's why we had to get married so young.
That is something you should have told me.
You never wanted me to talk about my children.
I'm gonna go watch TV now.
Yeah, that's fine, honey. Why don't you go do that?
Yeah, can I come?
No.
Do you guys like really know each other then?
Oh, screw it. This is ridiculous. Oh, honey, he's really cute.
No, he's not.
Look at you. Are you really a mother? I don't believe it, sister.
All right. Let me get this straight. So you guys are a thing. You guys are a couple, right? You guys are together?
Yeah, yes.
No way. Break up right now.
And we are back for our quick fire quiz round. So Gary and I are going to ask Jamie 5 really difficult, complex questions on the film, the origin of the film, blood types of everyone involved. But it's just for fun. Just for fun. I'm sure you'll be great. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Gary, you want to go first this
time? Yeah, sure. So, what is the name of the man that Emily has slept with, played by Kevin Bacon?
He can't hold them. Lynn Hogan.
Yes, David Lynn Hogan.
Well done. I would not have got that. What was Hannah's nickname?
Nana.
Correct.
When was the film released?
2011?
Yes.
What did Cal build for Emily to reminisce over their first date?
The mini golf course that they went to.
Correct.
When Jacob first sees Cal at the bar, what is he drinking?
Vodka cranberry.
Yes.
What is Hannah's occupation?
Lawyer.
What does Robbie put on his chest to try and win the heart of Jessica?
A scarlet J.
Yes. Yes, well done.
Who did Cal first sleep with from the bar?
Robbie's teacher.
Do you remember her name?
Miss.
It's okay. It was Kate. But I'll give you, obviously, that it was the teacher.
How long has Kate, the teacher, been sober?
5 years.
Yes.
Who is Jessica's crush?
Cal.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Yes.
I feel like it's been a while since we've had a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Nice.
That just goes to show how sad I am for watching Crazy Stupid Love a lot.
Well, from Rebecca's point of view, yes.
What's the meetings?
My dog has just done a fart and it's absolutely stinking.
Wow.
It's so bad. Let's wrap this up.
Oh, you need to keep that in. That's funny.
Fantastic.
Okay, so now we're going to share our facts of the day. Gary, what is your fact?
Okay, so my fun fact of the day is cuddling releases a natural painkiller. So oxytocin, the so-called love or cuddle hormone, is produced during cuddles and decreases headaches significantly. Significantly.
Do you know, Gary, I nearly put that fact down.
There you go. We all need a cuddle then. That's really what it is.
I know.
Well, Rebecca does after I've been put through this podcast episode. But
yeah. Sluggish. Yeah,
okay. Is it me?
Aye.
The first person convicted of speeding was going 8 miles an hour.
Mm. What were they in? Were they in a car?
A wagon.
I think so, aye.
I'm not a sure. Horse.
I just googled
just
facts.
Just walking.
I googled facts of the day because I forgot we had to give a fact. So that's today's fact.
Oh, nice to see you put some thought in. Again, I think my fact may have been said before as well. So apparently, Buzz Lightyear's original name is Lunar Larry.
Hmm, that's quite good. Lunar Larry.
I like that.
I do.
Lovely. Okay. Well. Just to round off the show, we're now going to recommend something creative that you think our listeners should check out. So it could be anything from a project, a short film, music, a book, poetry, absolutely anything at all that you are involved in or know someone else that's involved in. Gary, what's your recommendation?
So my creative recommendation is an app called Fabulous, which sounds very vain, I know. But it's a mental well-being app that uses behavioural science to try and help give you a better lifestyle. And so you can use it for whatever you want to get through your day-to-day week. So it can help with like a work-life balance, or if you want to get more exercise or to do with dieting, or even just trying to find time to be more creative with your hobbies or writing or filming or acting or whatever. So for creatives out there who struggle to find the time to do what they love most, I recommend this app. Yeah, check it out. It might not be for everyone, but something a wee bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it sometimes these apps are really good at helping you establish a routine, especially in January when things are always feeling like, what am I doing? And starting afresh. And I'm glad that you've found something that's, you know, helping you with it. I use the Calm app a lot, sort of around this time last year. I was having problems sleeping, some problems with like anxiety and things like that, and it had meditation and stuff in it, but the sleep stories were my favourite. So that's a nice recommendation.
Mine is a song. It's nice. Called Fire, and it's by Mavica. It's spelled
M-A- Is this the one you sent me over the weekend?
Yeah. It's Mavica is the artist's name spelled. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. But, I found it recently and it's a cracking song.
Nice. That's the first time I think we've had a song. We've had bands, but I think that's the first time we've had an actual song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always listening to music. Just, I don't know why, I like really cinematic stuff and acoustic stuff. And
Yeah. It's good for when you're visualising pieces and getting into rehearsals and things like that. So if you are listening and you have a piece of poetry or have any music or anything that you have written, please let us know. It's good to kind of spread the word about these things. My creative recommendation is a short film called Behind the Mask. I've mentioned this platform before, so I found it on Clippist. And it's very, very, very funny. The three of us and any other creators out there, honestly, please check it out. I couldn't stop laughing. It's basically looking at actors, but I think it's fair to say, as the short film goes on, that it's kind of all creatives, and just how sometimes there are a few egos involved, a bit of toxic behaviour, some vanity, and that constant pressure of you need to be doing something all the time and something creative, otherwise you're going to fall to the wayside and never be a success. Definitely check that out. Very good. Very funny. Lovely. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast and bringing with you crazy, stupid love, or crazy and stupid love, or crazy, stupid love. Any other variations of that? I don't know. Can you let our listeners know where they can find you on social media and keep up to date with all of your projects and things?
Yeah, it's at Jamie Thorburn 1 on Instagram, I think. And that's where all sort of like my acting stuff goes. If anybody needs a haircut, it's at Jamie Cuts.
Yes.
Jamie _ Cuts.
And where is your business?
It's in Kirkcaldy. It's 91A Strathkinnis Road.
Go and see Jamie.
Go and see me if you need a haircut. And I'm a better actor than I am barber, so hire me for that first.
Wow. Yeah, very true.
And then hopefully I'll have the play Deconstruction on stage at some point this year.
Yeah. Nice. Absolutely. Lovely. It was so nice to have you on. I'm Rebecca, and you can still follow me. Oh, God, I just did a Gary. Oh my gosh. You can catch me on Instagram at Riddle Rebecca and Twitter at RiddleR.
Yep, that was still Rebecca, and I am still Gary. And you can still follow me at QG Pro on Instagram and on Twitter.
Do you have a joke?
I do.
What do you get if you sit under a cow? A pat on the head.
Nice.
Oh dear.
Nice. And I've just remembered mine now. Mine was what do you call a deaf dinosaur? It doesn't matter, he can't hear you.
I like that. That was good.
That's sad. I thought you were gonna do the bear one. Jimmy.
How do you what cheese do you use to get a bear out of a cave? Camembert.
Come on, bear.
Oh gosh, well, that was lots of jokes. Very nice. So if you enjoyed this episode and this hilarious content, please like, subscribe and share. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could rate and review us. You can also send us your comments to our email address at choosefilmpodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow the podcast at Film Choose on Twitter and Choose Film Podcast on Instagram.
You've been listening to Choose Film Podcast, and join us next week for our next episode, because we don't know who or what the film is yet.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.